Okay, it's great to be back with you for another GoldSeek.com Radio Gold Nugget segment. Today's special guest, co-author of the new best-selling book, The Money Bubble, James Turk. It's a pleasure to welcome back James Turk, who has just released a new book. He's the co-author of The Money Bubble. Welcome back, James Turk.
Thanks, Chris.
10 years ago, you published The Coming Collapse of the Dollar with John Rubino, warning readers to take profits on real estate and direct them into gold. And anyone who took your advice certainly benefited handsomely. In The Money Bubble, you note that by avoiding the true problem, governments printing mountains of money and stimulus fiat-related money, the global central bankers have set the stage for yet another even larger crisis of epic proportions. Let me let you tell folks about your latest book.
Yeah, The Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. You know, John and I started working on it early last year, and it's just now been published. In the coming collapse of the dollar, we expected that ultimately the dollar itself, would not only collapse against gold, but basically collapse as a means of currency. And, the gold price rose, the financial bust occurred, the housing bust occurred just as we expected it to. But because of all of this money printing in 2008, literally trillions and trillions of money printing, they managed to pump it up one more time to keep the system going, even though the system itself is terribly broken. So what we decided to do, particularly as the gold price was sliding last year, is to reevaluate all of the basic assumptions, go back and analyze every key point, and put it together to see whether we were still on the main road. And basically, we've concluded that, yes, the problems are there. They haven't been solved. The money printing has basically just kicked the can a little bit further down the road, but, now we're at the cliff, and I think we're very, very close to what we expected in 2008 to happen here in the not-too-distant future. And basically, what we're expecting is that, all of this debt that's been put onto an already over-debt-laden financial system, it's just killing economic activity, and it has to be addressed. It wasn't addressed in 2008, and it has to be addressed now. The low interest rates have managed to keep the system going a little bit longer, but you're destroying capital by keeping interest rates so low, and that is falling on the backs of savers and the middle class. Because there are no alternatives to save, currencies anymore. People have to own physical gold and physical silver, which is ultimately what I think is going to be returned as currency when this final bubble, the money bubble, finally pops.
It's already a classic because you discuss the worst case scenario where the global system implodes in what you're referring to as, a new Great Depression that's worse than the recent Great Recession of 2008. Could you tell listeners why you expect a crack-up boom and the end of fiat money?
Basically, we've been on this path for 100 years, since the Federal Reserve was created in 1913, where the dollar slowly gets debased, its purchasing power gets eroded. And if you go back and look throughout monetary history, whenever you're on that kind of path, eventually the currency collapses. There are no exceptions. And the reason why the currency collapses is that inevitably people lose confidence in the currency when it's not backed by anything of substance. And that's exactly what's happening now. You're seeing confidence eroding in institutions, as we discussed in the book. You're seeing confidence eroding in the banks. And ultimately it's impacting the currency, and the currency is critical, Chris, because you need a sound currency for economic activity. The role of the government should be basically to maintain a level playing field, and one key element of maintaining a level playing field is to have a currency that everybody can deal with on a fair and equitable basis. But what's happened since 2008 particularly is the playing field has been tilted in favor of special interests. And as a consequence, that's why you're seeing so many protests around the world and why economic activity around the world is doing so poorly. The currency is not working the way it should be working.
Under the scenario that you've outlined in the book, the value of many paper assets, such as equities and even sovereign debt like treasuries, could evaporate. Please outline the dangers posed by the money bubble to the typical investor.
When you talk about wealth, it really comes in two different forms. You have a tangible wealth. Things like farmland, timberland, oil wells, gold mines, or mines of all sorts, houses, That's a tangible wealth that has real substance to it. The other kind of wealth is financial wealth. You know, promises to pay. You know, if you deposit money in the bank promises to pay money back when you want it or when you need it. Or if you have an insurance policy, the insurance policy promises to make good on that insurance policy should the terms of the policy be triggered. But all of these forms of financial wealth are based on what's called counterparty risk. In other words, you're deferring your own purchasing power, the ability to acquire real tangible assets, accepting financial wealth in exchange for some kind of return based on someone's promise. And during periods of financial bust, and that's what we've been basically going through for several years now, and we're still going through it, promises are broken. And so the key to protect yourself during these periods is to hold tangible assets and to avoid, where possible, financial assets. In other words, avoid promises. And money has become nothing but a promise these days. It's not backed by anything anymore. And when the debt loads of governments become too big, they just print more money, until ultimately the currency itself is destroyed. And we're right now, I think, very close to that point, where confidence in the currency is declining. It's starting to accelerate, in my view. And as a consequence, the currency itself will cease to exist. And that's going to disrupt economic activity. But I want to make a key point, Chris. What we're providing in the book is a lot of useful information. Everybody can take that information and look at it and understand more about the financial system and gain our perspective. And then they have to make a decision as to what they need to do to prepare for some uncertainty in the months and years ahead. And we think one of the key elements is, aside from the strategy of accumulating tangible assets of all sorts, you have to accumulate the most liquid tangible asset, which, after all, is what money is in a society. It's the most liquid tangible assets. And by that, of course, I'm meaning gold and silver, physical gold and physical silver.
You know, the term martial law, I think, is thrown around so regularly in the blogosphere that sometimes it loses credibility. You also bring up this topic, and it's an interesting one. I wonder if you could outline the threat of a police state and its implications.
Yeah, you know, we're moving toward what everybody calls financial repression. You know, financial repression comes in many different forms. It comes by government control of interest rates. It comes in terms of capital controls. I mean, it's very difficult now for a U.S. citizen to open a bank account anywhere in the world because of the various forms of financial suppression being followed by the U.S. government already. But what happens is, when a currency no longer works, rather than acknowledging that there's a defect in the currency itself, governments resort to financial repression, and that becomes more and more severe, and that continues to impair economic activity. The trends are there. The writing is on the wall. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we're concluding that, people have to take steps to prepare for some tough times ahead, like we saw in 2008, but probably going to be worse, because this time there's no opportunity to print more money to solve the problem. You cannot get out of a debt problem, which is what we have in the United States today, by taking on more debt. Politicians refuse to acknowledge that reality.
Each week we read of new restrictions placed on investors and businesses interested in moving funds offshore. You've already touched on this. I wonder if you would outline specific concerns that you have about impending capital controls.
One of the things that happens in countries, if you look back in monetary history, is that they try to make it more and more difficult for the citizens to do what they want with their money. A good example is what's going on in Argentina now, where they're making it very difficult for Argentinians to purchase goods and services online. It's another form of financial repression. We live in a world that's uncertain. Nobody can predict the future. We don't know what's coming. So what every individual has to do is to take some steps that enables them to feel comfortable that, regardless what happens in the future, they and their families, are protected. And I think one of the key elements to achieve that objective is to diversify one's assets in as many ways as possible, not only the types of assets, but where those assets are actually placed. In other words, diversify internationally in addition to diversifying into different types of assets. I think the key to get through what we've got coming is to diversify yourself as much as possible and to do it with a global international view. And it can be done in a variety of different ways, you know, some of which we discuss in The Money Bubble.
In your new book, you discuss the dangers posed by barely extant banking system. Could you tell us how central banks may have taken over the world?
Yeah, I think it's pretty obvious to most people, you know, that central banks and banking in generally, you know, has taken control, you know, of governments. You know, after the 2008 financial crisis, when the big bailouts were being proposed, the bailouts of the banking system, you know, I saw polls of the American people were saying that 80% were against it, but, you know, the bailouts were done anyway, despite the fact that the majority of the people were against it. So it shows that the people are disconnected from government. You know, government is not really doing what the people want. Government today is doing what the bankers want. And what the bankers want is not, it may be good for Wall Street, but it's not necessarily good for Main Street. And I think that's the issue that not just the United States, but pretty much the world is facing, because the central bankers have basically, and banking in general, have basically tilted that what's supposed to be a level playing field, they've tilted it into their favor.
The rise of Bitcoin caught many investors off guard. Gold Money and Gold Seek Radio were both early, though, in this trend. We added a Bitcoin payment system when the digital currency was trading around $5. It subsequently soared to about $1,000. However, you're concerned that some of these cryptocurrencies could present substantial risk to investors.
Yeah, you know, I think the term cryptocurrencies and, you know, what they encompass is a brilliant innovation. And I think they are definitely here to stay. And Bitcoin is the most predominant. It has the first mover advantage. You know, whether a new cryptocurrency will emerge a few months down the road and take market share away from Bitcoin, you know, only time will tell. There are a lot of different currencies out there that are trying to develop this new technological innovation that these currencies offer. But, you know, like anything else, you know, when you're going to be investing or spending your money, you have to do a certain amount of investigation and make sure that you're comfortable with this particular, you know, investment or particular currency. I personally believe that Bitcoin has a future, or cryptocurrencies have a future, but, you know, everybody has to look at it very carefully before they take any steps in that direction.
You caution folks to avoid debt and pay off existing obligations, yet you also are expecting runaway inflation. I wonder if you could tell investors why they should be paying off their debts when it's possible that inflation could wipe the debt slate clean.
Yeah, well, you know, this question is tied to the one we were previously talking about in terms of the bankers. You know, it's very easy for the bankers to have the rules rewritten that if the dollar does collapse and a new currency emerges, that the debt has to be repaid not in the old currency that collapsed, but in the new currency that represents the fair value of the asset, securing the debt, or, you know, just some fair value based on, you know, how prices have moved, in order to represent some kind of equity back to the bank. And what John and I discuss in the book is what happened to Thomas Jefferson, you know, the author of the Declaration of Independence. He died poor because he ended up having to pay the debt on his father-in-law's estate twice. He paid it first in terms of the local currency during the War of Independence. He put the money with the Virginia government, but the currency was destroyed. And he ended up having to repay the debt a second time after the war ended in British pounds. And, of course, at the time, the British pound was on a gold standard. And having to pay the debt the second time, you know, nearly bankrupted him, and he ended up basically a pauper when he died. So you can't assume that just because you have debt that the banks are going to let you repay that debt in a currency that collapses. And we think the safest way to play this is to avoid debt altogether and just own tangible assets free and clear without any debt obligations.
Well, that's the best explanation I've heard in the 8 years we've been on the show, so hat tip for that. Chapter 22, you offer the case for $10,000 gold. Lofty target, and listeners are going to want to know why.
Yeah, well, you know, if anybody's been following my work over the years, you know, back at the beginning of, in 2001, when I first founded Gold Money, and, you know, the gold price was around $300 an ounce, I was saying that over the next 12 Actually, between 2013 and 2015, we were going to be up around $8,000 an ounce. You know, we've gone from 300 to up to 2,000, back a little bit, but we still have the big move yet to come. And maybe my timing's going to be wrong, but all of the mechanical and mathematical formulas that I use to value gold, which John and I discuss in detail in the book, suggest that we're really looking now at a price over $10,000 per ounce. What's happened from the time when I first made that forecast to the present is the target has moved higher for the simple reason that the dollar itself has been debased so badly by all of the new debt and the various policies that are being followed by the Federal Reserve. So we've had to move the goalposts, you know, a little bit further down the field to account for all of that dollar debasement. So we're ultimately lay out the reasons as to why, you know, why we're in a bubble, why people don't truly understand today what money really is. And this is all explained in the book. And, you know, why gold will reemerge not only as money, but also as a form of currency. It's money today in the sense that, you know, when you have money, you can do two things with it, Chris. You can either spend it or you can save it. And there's an old principle in monetary theory called Gresham's Law. It was set up by the advisor to Elizabeth I in the United Kingdom. He said basically bad money drives out good. In other words, you save the good money and you spend the bad money. And that's all. That's what's happening today with gold. You know, people buy it and accumulate it and save it, and we're forced to use these bad currencies, which are the national currencies. And ultimately, you're going to see the national currencies go the way they always do go, which is they collapse, and gold and silver will reemerge as currency in some form in the future. Maybe a combination of a Bitcoin, gold, silver, digital cryptocurrency. You know, we just don't know. We don't know how the technology is going to take it. We don't know what politicians are going to try to do to fight to maintain the status quo, where the banks have a disadvantage, have the advantage to the disadvantage of American citizen. So all you can do is sort of, you know, take it day by day, but you have to plan now as best you possibly can for an uncertain future. And I always keep coming back to physical gold and physical silver, you know, accumulating that savings. But you can't, the point is that savings are important for everybody, but you can't save national currency because you don't earn interest income to offset the risk of those currencies. What you really need to do is save physical metal, because you're saving purchasing power for a rainy day, or to purchase a consumer good, or, you know, to plan for your retirement. The precious metals are the way to go for that, to achieve those strategies in a safe, proven way.
You know, investors typically think of poor man's gold, silver, as just a less expensive play on the yellow metal gold. But last week we saw gold explode higher. Bad news, manufacturing news from China dampened the prospects for industrial metals, so silver actually sagged as gold shot up significantly higher on the weaker dollar, among other factors. I wonder if you might explain to folks why the case for $100 silver could be a bit different than the gold story.
Yeah, you know, gold is money. That's where most of its value comes from. It doesn't come from its use in industry. It comes from the fact that it's very useful in economic calculation to measure the prices of goods and services. Silver, on the other hand, has value for two different reasons. It has an industrial component, but it also has a monetary component. And this monetary component is I call it a gold substitute. You know, right now it takes about 64 ounces of silver to equal 1 ounce of gold. Well, if you own 64 ounces of silver instead of 1 ounce of gold, those 64 ounces of silver do the same thing for you, in the sense that you have money, physical money, outside the banking system with no counterparty risk. Now, as you go through a financial crisis, you know, people start to look for alternatives. Obviously, they're going to move into gold, but silver is cheap relative to gold, because right now the ratio is 64, but during normal times it should be closer to 20 or lower, 20 ounces of silver to equal 1 ounce of gold or lower than that. So over the next several years, my expectation is that silver is going to do even better than gold does. But you have to remember, silver is much more volatile than gold, and so consequently it may not be for everybody.
I wonder if you could tell people more about this excellent Money Bubble book. I have a copy here. I highly recommend the digital copy. And by the way, thank you for that. It's a wonderful read, and everybody's going to want a copy on their desktop, and probably a hard copy as well. You can download right now from Amazon.com. Can you tell folks any other contact information or whatever's new at goldmoney.com?
Basically, you can order the Money Bubble, What to Do Before It Pops. Amazon, it's also available in local bookstores. If your local store doesn't have it, it can be ordered through the local store because it is being distributed just like all other books are being distributed. We hope that people find it, you know, useful as they try to deal with the difficult circumstances, economic and monetary circumstances that we live in today. You can find more information about the book at John Rubino's, my co-author, his website, dollarcollapse.com. And I've also written some information about it on goldmoney.com. I hope people find it a very useful and informative book. Thank you, Chris.